You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, Sixth Sense. Sixth Sense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With Sixth Sense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. Visit sixthsense.com to learn why enterprises choose them. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities, solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us.
We were notified by one of our customers. They were seeing an attack that had a specific message in the attack traffic, which drew their attention.
That's Larry Cashdollar. He's a principal security intelligence response engineer at Akamai Technologies. The research we're discussing today is titled, Are Evil Resurgence or a Copycat? And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And they asked the CERT to investigate. So I hopped on a call with them, and we were looking at the attack traffic. And it's not stuff that we normally see. You know, typically the type of attack traffic we see is just more, it's not so specific. But the requests had a specific message, which is kind of uncommon. And the message was part of the path in the GET request for HTTP. So we thought that was kind of unique and interesting, so we investigated further, and that's pretty much how we ended up writing up this blog post.
Yeah. Well, let's walk through it together. Can you give us some of the details about the attack itself?
Sure. The attack was originating from widely distributed IP ranges. So these IP addresses were in U.S. territory. They were in Argentina, Brazil, the U.K., Russia, Iran. They were just really widely distributed across the globe. And initially, you know, we thought it's likely going to be either infected IoT devices or proxy servers. And upon investigating further, we noticed that these IP addresses were MikroTik routers, a lot of them, which was part of the Maris botnet. Months ago, I believe the Maris botnet was utilizing MikroTik routers to proxy attack traffic through. Thinking of this, you know, we thought perhaps it was someone utilizing part of the Maris botnet, but we couldn't really prove that if somebody was either borrowing a part of it or just reusing the devices that Maris had used. It was unclear to us, you know, during the investigation. The attack itself was pretty simple. It was a GET request, and as I had mentioned earlier, the path in the GET request had a specific message for our customer to comply with a certain demand and then provide some Bitcoin in order for the attack to stop. The attack itself wasn't very sophisticated. They were using some cache busting techniques where the query string in the GET request was like a 8 randomized character string. And that's, you know, that's something where when a web server or a caching web server sees the request, it thinks it's unique and it doesn't try and pull it from cache. It tries to pull it from the origin directly, increasing load on the origin server and bypassing, you know, any load balancing or caching systems. So we, you know, it wasn't a super sophisticated attack, yet it wasn't a very sophisticated attack. It was sort of low level and with basic just attack techniques. We noticed that the user agent string was also the same. It was the same user agent string across all IP addresses that were attacking the system. So that was another interesting tidbit that we you know noticed that it was unique in that fashion too. Usually they use different user agent strings and things like that. So
Rival is not generally known for DDoS attacks. I mean, they're kind of famous for being a ransomware as a service organization. So did that throw into question the plausibility of this being from them?
We kind of question that because we don't know if they were attempting to pivot into a different monetization method, because typically, you know, as you mentioned, they use ransomware. They're the ransomware as a service, and there's no ransomware present in this attack. So we're not sure if they're trying a new model of making money or if there's actually someone, a copycat attacker, who is attempting to piggyback on their notoriety. You know, folks are aware are evil, and they've been in the news, and, you know, this adversary could be attempting to use their publicity to threaten and intimidate the target. So we're not exactly sure which one it is, but it's right. Definitely something of interest.
Kind of a Dread Pirate Roberts situation where the name is important, right?
Right.
What about the messaging that you said was in the headers themselves? I mean, the specificity of that strikes me as being interesting in itself.
Yes, the message was asking for compliance against a specific court order, and it had something to do with a government court order, and it was very political, which isn't like anything we've seen from Rival before. So it was something that was not, it didn't seem like it was something that would be in their wheelhouse. So again, we weren't sure if somebody was just attempting to use their notoriety to get their message across or get their demands met or what. So it was still unclear.
What about the DDoSing itself? I mean, what level of traffic are we talking about here?
We saw at peak, it was about 15,000 requests per second, which isn't super high. It's not insignificant, but it's you know, the Marist botnet was producing way more traffic than that. So this didn't seem like it was a full bore capability of the Marist botnet. This seemed like it was either somebody building on top of the vulnerable devices, or, you know, as I had mentioned earlier, were using part of a botnet that they might have either purchased or possibly got permission to use. We're not exactly sure, but it wasn't a big amount of attack traffic.
Well, how long did it last, and what sort of things did your customer do to parry against it?
The attack lasted about an hour, and then there was a small burst of traffic after that attack that was less significant than the first attack, and then the attack disappeared, and we didn't see any more traffic after that. The customers, our systems array controls were handling it, so it because of the initial burst, our systems were able to just ignore the attack traffic, and you know, the customer was able to say, hey, what's going on? Why are we seeing this? And you know, they were able to further pivot and fix their or shore up their defenses in case another more intense attack occurred.
Where do we stand right now when it comes to being able to do that sort of thing, to defend against these sorts of DDoS attacks? Is it becoming almost routine to be able to have this not really have a great effect on organizations if they're properly prepared?
Yes. You know, if organizations can prepare for this type of attack in advance, then they likely won't even notice the attack traffic. Unless they're checking their web traffic logs and things like that, you know, they probably won't even notice. So it's always a good idea to try and shore up your defenses before you find out that you've, you know, should have shored them up, and then you get an attack, and then suddenly your origin server's down, or your backend database is crashed because there's so many connections to your website.
So what are your recommendations for organizations then to properly prepare themselves against the possibility of this sort of thing?
I would definitely look at having your, if your website, if you think you might be a target or you expect to be, you know, handling a lot of traffic, then look at, you know, content delivery networks such as Akamai, or definitely have load balancing, traffic filtering, things like that. You know, if you're only expecting inbound traffic on port 80 and 443 for web traffic, then why would you allow UDP traffic on port 53 for DNS on your network? You know, it's making sure that your systems are locked down and you know, the traffic that you're expecting is allowed in, and anything unknown or is odd is automatically blocked by your defense system.
Our thanks to Larry Cashdollar from Akamai for joining us. The research is titled "Are Evil Resurgence or a Copycat?" We'll have a link in the show notes.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.
The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Rachel Gelfand, Liz Irvin, Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brandon Karpf, Eliana White, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabi, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here next week.